good to be here. I'm excited to have a conversation. An open conversation without a filter between us. No social media algorithms floating around in the air. No TV screens separating us. I think that this is how we're going to get our country back. Through free speech and open debate. Closing the gap between what people are willing to say in private and what they're willing to say in public. And the only way we're going to do that is all of us, not just me, all of us, starting to talk openly again. I'm meeting many of you for the first time, so I'll tell you a bit about myself to kick this off. My parents came to this country 40 years ago with no money in their pocket. In a single generation, I have gone on to found multiple multi-billion dollar companies. One of them was a biotech company that developed life-saving and life-changing therapies. One of them is a life-saving therapy in kids, 100% of whom die of a genetic disease by the age of 3. I worked on a therapy where a majority of those kids now live lives of normal duration if they're treated. I worked on building a firm called Strive that competes against the likes of BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard, by telling people we're not going to use your retirement money to advance social and political agendas in corporate America's boardrooms, but we'll instead, as shareholders, tell American companies to knock it off with the politics and to focus on making products and services for customers who actually need them and to make a profit while doing it. That firm's been a success. It crossed over $1 billion very recently, 1 year after we launched it. That was my journey. I did it while marrying my wife, Apoorva, raising our 2 sons, following our faith in God. That is the American dream. I am genuinely worried that that American dream will not exist for our 2 sons and their generation unless we all step up and do something about it. We're in the middle right now of a national identity crisis. Faith, patriotism, hard work, family. These things have disappeared only to be replaced by new secular cults in this country. Wokeism, transgenderism, climatism, COVIDism, globalism. Depression, anxiety, fentanyl, suicide. Do you think it's a coincidence that we see the rise of these different poisons at the same time in our national history? It is not. These are symptoms of something deeper in our country. And I'll tell you what that is. Speaking as a member of my generation, I can tell you what that is. I'm 38 years old, by the way. I was born in 1985. That makes me the youngest person ever to run for US president as a Republican. And I can tell you, speaking as a young person in this race, here's what's going on. We are all hungry for a cause. My generation, we are starved for purpose and meaning and identity at a time in our national history when the things that used to fill that void, belief in God, belief in country, belief in self, these things have disappeared. And that leaves that moral vacuum, that black hole in our hearts. And when you have a black hole that runs that deep, that is when the poison fills the void. It almost doesn't matter what the poison is exactly. See, this is what the left is good at in this country. They will fill that vacuum with their vision of race, gender, sexuality, and climate. And for a long time on our side, we have grown complacent with just saying, hey, here's why all those things are wrong, why we're against that. Whereas, here's how we actually win. What we actually need is an alternative vision of our own. So if the other side is talking about race, gender, sexuality, and climate, I want us talking more about the value of each individual, the family, the nation, God. You see, individual, family, nation, God, that beats race, gender, sexuality, and climate if we have the courage to actually stand for something. For a long time, we conservatives, we have been running from something. Now is our moment to actually start running to something. To our vision of what it means to be an American today. That's what we're going to talk about. What does it mean to be an American? To me, it means you believe in the ideals that set this nation into motion 250 years ago. Ideals like meritocracy and the pursuit of excellence. That you get ahead in this country not on the color of your skin, but on the content of your character and your contributions. That is why I've said that we will end race-based affirmative action and group quotas in every area of American life. It has been a cancer on our national soul, and we are done with it. What does it mean to be an American? It means we believe in the rule of law. I say this as the kid of legal immigrants to this country. That means that your first act of entering this country cannot break the law, which is why I've said that as U.S. president, I will use our own military to secure our own southern border in this country, and if necessary, our northern border too. That is what it means to stand for the rule of law in the United States of America. What does it mean to be an American? It means we believe in this radical dream that our founding fathers had 250 years ago. A radical dream that I have as a citizen today. That the people who we elect to run the government ought to be the ones who actually run the government. Not the shadow government in the deep state, those three-letter government agencies that run the show today. So you know what? If I can't work for you all, the taxpayers, for more than 8 years as U.S. president, which I think is a good thing, then neither should any of those federal bureaucrats reporting into me either. 8-year term limits for the bureaucracy over the civil service protections. Well, you know what? If there are government agencies that have become so corrupted that they cannot be reformed, government agencies that have so badly abandoned their purpose that they should not exist, we're not just going to tinker around the edges. From the FBI to the IRS to the ATF to the CDC to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, to the U.S. Department of Education, we are going to get in there and shut them down. That is how you revive the integrity of a three-branch constitutional republic. You see, these aren't Democrat ideas or Republican ideas. They're not black ideas or white ideas. These are fundamentally American ideals that we fought a revolution to secure in this country in 1776. That idea that we the people create a government that is accountable to us, not the other way around. That idea that we the people sort out our differences through free speech and open debate in a constitutional republic where every citizen's voice and vote counts equally. Not in the back of palace halls in old world England. Not in the back of BlackRock's corner office in Manhattan today. Not in the back of three-letter agency buildings in Washington, D.C. No, we the people came together to create a government that is accountable to us, that tells us the truth. Now, I'll tell you, this is why my generation, I'm a millennial, this is why we're so skeptical of the government, actually. I grew up into a generation where our government repeatedly made a habit of lying to us, actually. Lied to us about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Lied to us about the 2008 financial crisis and the bailouts that followed. Now, those were under Republican administrations. Lied to us about the Trump-Russia collusion hoax that never was. lied to us about the origin of the COVID-19 pandemic, or what we knew about the vaccines before they were mandated, or about the Hunter Biden laptop story on the eve of a presidential election, or about that Nashville transgender shooter manifesto that still has not been released, or about how our money is now being spent abroad in wars that don't advance the US interest. What we demand is a government that tells us the truth again. And you know, this is the moment we live in. For most of human history, it was also done this way. A belief that the government had to tell the people the noble lie. That the people can't be trusted with the truth. Well, you know what we say? We the people, we can be trusted with the truth. We can handle the truth. We demand the truth. We require the truth. And if I bring one thing to the US government, it will be a government that once again just tells the truth to the people. Not when it is easy, but when it is hard. You see, for me, thank you. That's what this campaign is all about. For me, November 2024, the date of the election, January 2025, when I take office, that's not the finish line. That is the start line. For me, the finish line is January 2033, when I leave office after two terms. What do I want to tell you all that we actually did? See, I'm not a politician. I don't pay attention to inauguration speeches. They bore me, frankly. They are full of unfulfilled promises. But I pay attention to every farewell speech, because that's when you hear what they did. Ronald Reagan's in January of 1989, one of the greatest of all time, where he said, "We revived a sort of national character that we lacked when I first took office in January of 1981. That's what he said. What do I want to tell you when my older son, he's not even going to yet be in high school. What do I want to tell you in January 2033 when we leave that White House? I want to tell you that once again in the United States of America, we have three branches of government, not four. That we shut down the unconstitutional administrative state. That we laid off 75% of the federal bureaucrats that we no longer need in Washington, D.C. That much I know we can get done. I want to tell you, thank you, that our economy is once again growing as a consequence of that at the fastest rate in the developed world again, because we embrace capitalism instead of apologizing for it, because we've lifted the wet blanket of the regulatory state and unconstitutional federal regulations along with it that hold our industries back, that we drill, we frack, we burn coal, we embrace nuclear energy, that we no longer pay people more to stay at home than we do to go to work. That much I know we can get done. I want to tell you that we no longer depend on our enemy, communist China, for our modern way of life, from the shoes on our feet to the phones in our pockets. That much I know we can get done. I want to tell you that we kept our country out of World War III, which I worry that our current president, with some Republican aid, is on our way to sleepwalking our way into by breaking apart the Russia-China alliance. That much I know we can do. But I want to tell you most of all that my two sons and their generation, that they are once again proud to be citizens of this nation. We have a crisis of national pride today in our country. Less than 16% of Gen Z says they're even proud to be an American. 60% of young Americans say that they would sooner give up their right to vote than to give up their access to TikTok. I'm not making that up. It's just the truth of where we are. See, young people, we don't value a country that we just passively inherit. We value a country we have a stake in building, in knowing something about. That's why I've said that every high school senior who graduates from high school should have to pass the same civics test that my own mother and my wife's parents and everybody else had to pass in order to become voting citizens of this country, that every immigrant has to pass to become a voting citizen of this country. That's what it means to know something about a country, to stand for the duties that we bear as citizens. I'll tell you what happened. My generation, right? We grew up into 10, 20, 30 years in this country where we were taught to celebrate our diversity and our differences so much that we forgot all of the ways we are really just the same as Americans, bound by a common set of ideals that set this nation into motion 250 years ago. I believe deep in my bones that those ideals still exist. I am running for president to revive them. And the only way we are going to do it is all of us starting to speak the truth in the open again, not just when it is easy, but when it is hard. All of us saying in public with a spine what we otherwise would only privately say at the dinner table. That is what this campaign is all about. Speak the truth. Speak it without apology. That's what we're doing today. God is real. There are two genders. Fossil fuels are a requirement for human prosperity. Reverse racism is racism. An open border is not a border. Parents determine the education of their children. The nuclear family is the greatest form of governance known to mankind. Capitalism is the best system known to man to lift us up from poverty. There are three branches of government, not four. And the U.S. Constitution is the strongest and greatest guarantor of freedom in human history. That is the truth. We fight for the truth. We stand up for the truth. That is what won us the American Revolution. That is what reunited us after the Civil War. That is what won us two world wars and the Cold War. That is the dream that still gives hope to the free world today. And if we can revive that dream over group identity and victimhood and grievance, then nobody in the world, not a nation, not a corporation, not a virus, is going to defeat us. That is what American exceptionalism is all about. And that is what we together will revive to save this great nation. Thank you all for coming out today. I'm glad we're just getting warmed up. I appreciate all of you. And I promise you that if you do your part, we will do ours. We're going to open this up. Let's have a conversation. Don't hold back. And we've got microphones coming around, and I'm excited to hear from all of you. We've got a question there, and then we'll bring it back up here.
Hi, my name is Ryan. I'm a legitimate, I don't know which way I'm gonna vote. I have felt politically homeless most of my adult life. And usually every election comes around and I'm usually supporting one from both parties, which kind of shows you the disorder, I think, of the political system. And so I'm kind of torn. I often feel like I'm drawn towards both you or RFK Jr. And I just need you to help me or convince me of why you would be the right choice. I mean, at least in the primaries, because that's what's coming up currently.
Yes.
Which party to go for. So
thank you. I think you should come over and vote the Republican caucus.
I've been a Republican my whole life.
Thank you.
Only recently.
And you know what? These partisan labels. I mean, I'm part of the pro-American movement. That's what I stand for. Do you agree on the basic rules of the road? Do you agree on those principles that we talked about in the beginning? Meritocracy, the pursuit of excellence. Free speech, the idea that you get to speak your mind as long as I get to in return. Self-governance, the idea that we the people can be trusted to govern ourselves rather than kings or autocrats or technocrats. Do you agree on those basic ideals? If yes, we're on the same team. Maybe we disagree on corporate tax rates being high or low, whether ivermectin treats COVID or whatever. We could make up the list of details. Those are details. But on the basic rules of the road, I think most of us in this country share the basic principles in common. I think most of us believe that our neighbors and our classmates and our colleagues also share these ideals in common, but we don't feel sure anymore because we don't feel free to talk about it. So I think a lot of the division is artificial. It is made up. It is distorted through the filters of media and social media. And I think we can call the bluff on that division by all of us just doing what you just did. Stand up, ask a question, speak your mind, do it without a filter. Speak honestly. And what we're going to discover is we have an opportunity to win the 2024 election in a landslide, like what Reagan did in 1980. That's not 50-50 divide anymore. It is easily 80-20 in our favor of Americans who share those basic principles in common. Half the 20 are people younger than me, maybe younger than you, who never learned those ideals in the first place, and we're going to bring them along too. And so I see an opportunity to unite this country, not by compromising on our principles. I'm not a compromise guy. But I think by being uncompromising about the principles that unite all of us as Americans. Our diversity is not our strength. Our strength is what unites us across that diversity. And let's be really honest, those are radical ideas. That idea that you get to speak your mind as long as I get to in return, that's a crazy idea. For most of human history, it was done the other way, okay? That idea that we, the people, could be trusted on how to settle our differences on climate change. By the way, this is one where I'm very different from RFK. He thinks people should be imprisoned for spreading climate misinformation. I disagree with him on that. The right answer is more speech, not less, and I think the climate change agenda is a cult and it is a hoax. The agenda is based on fraudulent premises. We can get as much detail on that as you want. Eight times as many people die of cold temperatures rather than warm ones. The right answer to all temperature-related deaths is greater and more abundant access to fossil fuels. 98% reduction in the climate disaster-related death rate over the last century because of greater utilization of energy produced here at home and in the West. So put that to one side, let's settle that through free speech and open debate and our differences. But I think that there's an opportunity for us to unite this country in a way that we're longing for, as Reagan did it in 1980. If I'm the Republican nominee, and it will help us get there if you vote in the Republican caucus and show up and make that happen, if I'm the Republican nominee, I am confident that we will win this election in a landslide. We will bring along independent, politically homeless people, young and old, black and white, doesn't matter. I've gone to the south side of Chicago, to Kensington in the middle of the inner city of Philadelphia. I haven't talked to Zelensky, but I have talked to people in West Maui, fellow Americans who were harmed and still left hung out to dry. For me, the America First movement includes all Americans, leaving no state behind, no city left behind, no American left behind. That's what America First means to me. We have 40% of our 100,000 donors, 100,000 plus in this campaign, 40% of them are first time ever donors to the GOP. Compared to 2% for normal Republican candidates. So yes, I can win this election in a landslide, and I think that's what's going to be necessary to both unite this country and have a moral mandate to take our shared American principles to the next level and translate them into action. I appreciate your question, and you know, we'll hope to see you at the Republican caucuses rather than the other way around. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we're longtime Republicans, business owners. You're very articulate, got the enthusiasm, you know, it's impressive. What I'm gonna ask you is, how do we get this room full of 35 and under people? Because they're the ones gonna win this election for us. You know, we can't go through another time, you know, where they're all going Democrat because we're just confused. You've gotta get them in here, and you might be the one to do it, but how are you gonna do it?
Mark, thank you. So that's my responsibility. That's my duty. If I'm the nominee, and even all the way up through now and that point in time, That is my job to get done as the youngest person ever to run for U.S. president as a Republican, as the only millennial to run. And I understand why the 2022 election was a red wave that never was. Right? The older generation of politicians, I mean, you follow these standard talking points about criticizing the radical Biden agenda. Right? Criticizing the failed radical left. That doesn't move people. We have to offer an actual vision of our own. Right? It's been a long time since we've done that in this country. And the left is actually good at this. I mean, they'll say, hey, go to Ben and Jerry's and order a cup of ice cream to young people with some social justice sprinkles on the side. Satisfy your moral hunger that way. We're at a point where we have an opportunity. I think that hit is now fading for lots of young people. We did the woke thing. But now we're ready for something new. That's where I think many young Americans are right now. Yeah. And so do we have it in us to serve up the real thing? Right, so there's something, you're talking about young people. There's something about being in your 20s that makes you want to stick it to the man, right? Stand up, be countercultural, to be heterodox, to be a hippie. That's where a lot of this woke stuff came from, right? We were dismantling the system, seeing the invisible systemic racism and societal injustices, all that stuff. Great, we did that. Now, what began as a challenge to the system has now become the new system. So now you know what I tell young people, and we're bringing them along in droves. Many of those 40,000 some odd donors are young people. First time ever to the GOP or to a politician even ever. What I'm telling them is, listen, you want to be countercultural? You want to be heterodox? You want to stick it to the man? Show up on your college campus or your graduate school or wherever you are and call yourself a conservative. Try that first, see how that works out. And say, you know what, I want to get married and stay married and have children and raise them, maybe to even believe in God and pledge allegiance to the flag. That is the new counterculture in our country. So I think we're a hair's trigger away from making faith and family and patriotism and hard work cool. Again, in this country, I think they're pretty cool. Yes. I think a lot of young people do too, if we can actually have the courage to say we're for that rather than just talking about the, I mean, how many times, I haven't really talked about Joe Biden that many times in the speech, I don't, rather than talking about the failed Biden agenda. That doesn't move people. First of all, he's not even the guy who's running the country, let's be honest, right? So you're missing the point if you're talking about defeating Biden. When I'm the nominee, you mark my words, I will not be running against Joe Biden. It's going to be some other puppet that they trot along. But we're missing the point by obsessing over any one individual versus actually asking ourselves, what do we affirmatively stand for? Stand for those values. I think that's the way we bring young people into our movement. And not by talking about Republicans and Democrats, but what I said, if we're in the same pro-American movement, then we're on the same team. If not, let's talk about it. We'll debate, but I think most of us share those values, and especially young people are starved and hungry for that sense of direction. That's my job to give it to them. That is uniquely my, the difference between 50.1 margin and a landslide is bringing people my age and younger along with us. We're already doing it. Put me in that position. That's my responsibility to see that through. I appreciate that, Mark. Appreciate that. Thank you.
I'm an engineer and a legal immigrant, just like your dad. And I'm very surprised by what you say about climate change. Because in 2020, in my street, there were many houses that were destroyed by the derecho, which is a new type of tornado that runs horizontally and destroys everything on their way. Last night the sun was red, like I've never seen that color, because the forest have been burning for months in Canada. I have plastic particles in my heart, and you do too, because the ocean is so polluted. So I wonder how you can defend this outrageous idea that we can keep business as usual, burn, frack, pollute, as we've done so far. And my hope is that you were saying that just to be elected, and that once you get elected, you're going to be a good leader, like many leaders of Indian heritage, like the UK Prime Minister, like the leaders of Microsoft and Google, and that you're going to open your eyes and see what you call the truth, because it's all around us. We're really screwing.
What's your name, sir?
Daniel.
Daniel, thank you. I appreciate you asking that question. You're following what I asked you to do in the beginning, which is to speak your mind in the open. That's what we need all of us doing more. So this happens to be a subject that I've studied deeply. I have a scientific background. I actually developed 5 FDA-approved medicines. I was a molecular biologist by undergrad training. I'm guided by the actual factual viewpoint here. The first thing I would say is there's a difference between being an environmentalist, standing for clean air and clean water, as I do, versus subscribing to what I call the climate cult internationally and here in the United States. So a lot of those fires, you're right, we have seen a rate of fires going up. You don't know why? Timber policy has been a disaster, where the natural burning through smaller scale fires, we don't let that happen anymore because environmental activists, including those in the climate movement, have stopped that from happening. That's a big part of what happens in places like Canada. A good argument that was responsible for what happened in Maui. Side note, in Maui, there's a climate activist who also believes in indigenous water rights that delayed by 6 hours, maybe more, the provision of water to people in West Maui that cost how many lives, we will never know. So I think we have to separate standing for the environment and for human flourishing, which I do, from adopting what I view as false claims of the climate change movement. I'll share some true facts. The Earth is covered by more green surface area coverage today than it was a century ago, which is unsurprising because carbon dioxide is plant food. 8 times as many people are dying of cold temperatures than warm ones. So we should question whether global surface temperatures going up by a little bit is really such a bad thing. Now, are there climate-related disasters today? Yes, there are. Have there been over history? Yes, there are. But the death rate from those climate-related disasters is down by 98% for every 100 who died in 1920 of a hurricane or a tornado or a drought. And I know we're going through a drought in this area too. I'm sensitive to that. But for every 100 people who would have died in 1920, 2 died today. Because of more plentiful and abundant and reliable access to fossil fuels and technology powered by them. So now let's get into one layer deeper, because you're asking such a good question. Let's go deep. Why is it that the same people who are opposed to carbon emissions in the United States are perfectly fine with shifting those carbon emissions to places like China? Because last time I checked, this was global warming that we were addressing. Oh, it's not just one for one the same. You said you're an engineer, and so we're bringing back, you know, some detail-oriented side of me here. Methane leakage is supposedly, even according to the climate religion, 80 times worse for global warming than is a unit of carbon dioxide. Methane leakage is far worse in China than it is in the United States. So that doesn't make sense. Then you say, okay, the movement that is most opposed to fossil fuels in the U.S. is also the one that is most hostile to nuclear energy, the greatest form of carbon-free energy production known to mankind. So the real question is, what the heck is going on here? And I'm adamantly pro-nuclear energy. It's why I want to shut down the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which has been standing in the way of new nuclear power plants in the United States. So what the heck is going on? It's that the climate agenda has nothing to do with the climate, actually. It has to do with global equity. Let's say that part out loud, the quiet part out loud. That's what this is about. Letting China and the rest of the world catch up to America from an economic perspective so that we can repay our colonialist sins of the past. These aren't my words. Look at the most fierce climate activists in the world, Greta Thunberg or otherwise. This is what they say. It's not about the climate, it's about justice. So then it makes sense, because nuclear energy might be too good at solving the supposed clean energy crisis, and then we wouldn't have a climate agenda to use as the back door for implementing a set of policies that are really just designed to hold the West, and the United States in particular, to hold us back. So it does take, and this is to your question, Mark, and to your earlier question, I think that our movement needs to level up. Right? We can't just say climate, you know, change agenda is bizarre and a hoax and leave it at that. I'll challenge anybody on the other side to go toe-to-toe with me on these facts, and that's great. We'll do it, because I believe in facts. I believe in the truth. But no, I'm not going to just say something. My goal is not to say certain things in the primary and do something in the general. We made a pledge in this race. The same video that I launched the campaign with on February 21st of this year will be the same video and message that we launched the general election campaign next year when I'm the nominee, if you all put me there. So we got to stay true to the North Star, but we've got to stay grounded in the actual facts as well. Are global surface temperatures going up? Yes. Are they man-made? Likely. But is that anywhere near an existential threat for humanity, or is there a shred of evidence to suggest it? Absolutely not. And the right answer is not less use of fossil fuels, oil and natural gas. It is actually going to be more to foster human prosperity while also pursuing nuclear energy and other areas that the climate movement is inexplicably hostile towards. So, as an engineer, I respect you for asking that question. It's why I wanted to go a layer deeper than we normally do in these conversations, but that is what grounds my convictions. And my job in this race is I will speak the truth, and by the end of this race, hopefully everybody in this country will know who we are and what we stand for. If after knowing that you decide to go for somebody else, I'm deeply at peace with that. In some ways, there would be an element of relief. I don't relish being the next president. I don't think we should want a president who does, for that matter. But we're doing it for 8 years to revive a country where, if we keep going down the current track, I think we're 20 years away from not having a country. Actually, my wife, Apoorva, she asked me when I first told her last November, you sure we want to, you know, we're thinking about doing this, she asked me, you sure we want to do this now versus 20, 25 years from now when our kids are out of the house and we have some more experience and so on. But I think the conclusion we came to is that we're not working with that kind of time. I think this is our moment to set the course right. And if we don't get that done, I don't think we have the same country that we knew and grew up in that we can take granted for another generation. That's why we're in this, and I appreciate that. Thank you, Matt. Great question. Come on, please.
I had a question. I know a lot of people I know are concerned about inflation. How do you combat that? How do you feel about balancing the budget? How do you feel about punching money that we don't have?
I don't feel good about it, is the answer. So there's a couple things I would say. First is the chokehold on American energy is one of the major drivers of inflation in this country. That's what drives up costs upstream, transportation costs, production costs, and otherwise. Drill, frack, burn coal, embrace nuclear. That's how you both increase GDP growth and bring down unwanted inflation. Now, we have to tie the government's hands. And one of the things we have to do that is to stabilize the US dollar as a unit of measurement. So I favor pegging the dollar to a basket of commodities with real value. And that stops the government from being able to print their way into fiscal irresponsibility. That also helps grow the economy. Back when we were on the gold standard before 1971, we had our highest levels of GDP growth before then. Dollar stability, or the loss of dollar stability, is actually one of the great causes of economic stagnation. Part of the problem is we're using national debt to pay people to do the exact opposite of what we should want them to do, paying them more to stay at home than to go to work. One of the top impediments to most businesses from growing right now is the fact they can't find enough people to fill the open positions. And yet we have a government that's incentivizing them to stay at home instead. That doesn't make any sense. The other major source of economic constraint in this country is the administrative state, is the regulatory state, those unconstitutional regulations coming from the federal government. Now, one of the things I've said is, because it's Iowa, you know, and I know you guys can handle it, I'll go into detail on this one too. Probably the most important case of the last decade, maybe of the 21st century, was a case called West Virginia versus EPA. which found that some of the EPA's restraints on the coal industry were actually unconstitutional because Congress never gave the authority to that three-letter agency. That's really important, because if that's true, that means the majority, literally most, federal regulations are also unconstitutional. So that's actually seismic in its impact. On day one, January 20th, 2025, I will rescind that majority of federal regulations that fails the Supreme Court's test in West Virginia versus EPA. This puts us on 3, 4, 5+% GDP growth in this country easily, compared to the 1-point-something trajectory we're on right now. And you know something? We all tend to be more proud of a country when we are all making more money in that country. Right now, the reason we have a lot of dissatisfaction is prices are up over 16% since 2020. Wages have largely stayed flat. You know what, if people are making the same amount but having to pay a lot more at the grocery store, yeah, they're a little angrier about that country. Part of the path to national unity runs through economic growth itself. And as somebody who has, yes, lived the full arc of the American dream with a successful career, not in politics, but in business, I will be best positioned to translate that back into action with not incremental reforms, but really a revival of the American Revolution itself. Three branches of government, not four. And I think that's the choice we face in this GOP primary, by the way. If you want incremental reform, go with somebody else. Do you want incremental reform, or do you want revolution? I stand on the side of those 1776 ideals that got us 250 years in. Let's double down on them so that we can actually make sure that we're ready for the next leg of the American journey as well. I appreciate that, man. We're gonna take two more questions and then we'll wrap up. Last two.
My name is Paul. I'm not a foreign policy or trade expert, but I know Iowa's got a huge dependence on China for purchase of pork, soybeans, etc. And other people who, you know, sell filberts and all sorts of things. We talk about independence from China.
Yes.
What does that mean? What does it mean for trade? And how do you accomplish that?
Great question. So the good news is you're honest about it. Most people who are foreign policy and trade experts are also not foreign policy and trade experts. And so we can think from first principles on this. It's a great question. So here's my actual view. I think we have to be willing to cut the cord from China unless and until China plays by the same set of rules. And so here's the way it's going to work is I'll sit across the table from Xi Jinping 6 to 9 months into office. In those first 6 to 9 months, I'm going to shore some things up here in the U.S., bring as much of the supply chains as we can back to the U.S., enter trade agreements with bilateral ones, not multilateral nonsense, but bilateral ones with Japan and South Korea and India and Australia, to put ourselves in a position to say, okay, we're now in as strong of a position as we can be. Then I'm going to sit across the table from Xi Jinping and say, listen up. We're done with it. We're cutting the cord. Unless you play by the same set of rules. No more IP theft. No more data theft. No more forced technology transfers. No more turning our companies into pawns. No more buying land in this country, donating to universities in this country. We're done with it. Unless and until you're playing by the same set of rules. You're out of the WTO included. We gotta play that forward. China is in a tougher spot than we are right now. If we have the courage to actually just open our eyes up and see it. Xi Jinping shot China in the foot last year when he held on to his unprecedented third term of power last October. The zero COVID policies has nothing to do with COVID in China. It had to do with him retaining power. So their economy's in a weak spot. So if we have a president with a spine, it's when you're most willing to make a sacrifice that you won't have to make one at all. And I don't think that should fall on any one group here. Whoever that is, that's gonna be everyone sharing that sacrifice equally. We can talk about what that means. But the beauty of it is, we know what the answer is gonna be. Xi Jinping is not gonna be able to withstand that because it's a lot harder for them than it is for us if we're really willing to go to that length to get them to play by the same set of rules. But the problem is, over the last 30 years, we had a bipartisan consensus that we could somehow export Big Macs and Happy Meals, and somehow that was going to spread democracy to places like China. That didn't work. See, we thought we could use our money to get them to be more like us. What they realized is they could do one step better. They could use their money, access to their market, to get us to be more like them. Actually, it's one step worse than that. They realized they could use our money to get us to be more like them, and it's worked. But the only way we're going to do it is by rewriting the rules as they should be, right? Because right now they say you can't enter the Chinese market if you criticize the CCP, if you apply that emissions cap over there. This is why companies don't do it in China. If you're BlackRock and says you don't want to vote for, you want to vote for emissions caps at PetroChina, they'll say close the door on your way out, or Apple or anybody else. But if you apply those emissions caps in the United States and criticize the US for systemic racism while staying silent about actual human rights atrocities in Xinjiang, they'll roll out the red carpet. So that's why companies do what companies do. Nike will flog the US for slavery 250 years ago without saying a peep about their own reliance on slave labor today to make shoes that provide, you know, sneakers to black kids in the inner city for $250. That's the game they'll play, because companies are going to do whatever they're going to do, whatever allowed them to make the most money. It's not even their fault, it's just the way the system works. But it's the job of US leadership to say we have to play by the same set of rules or we're not playing the game at all. And Xi Jinping will have to fold, because the way it works is, it is when you are most willing to make a sacrifice that you actually won't have to make one at all. That requires fortitude, that requires a spine. Here's how you know we don't have one right now. If that were a Russian spy balloon flying over half the United States, you know what we would have done? We'd have shot it down in an instant and ratcheted up sanctions. We didn't do it for the Chinese spy balloon because we're scared. Why are we scared? We're scared because we're dependent on them. So I think we have to think on the time scales of history rather than tomorrow. Do it in a way that minimizes, hopefully to zero, but it may not be to zero, but minimize as much as possible what the harm would be to the United States. Share that evenly. Should not be disproportionately borne by anyone, and there's ways to do that. But that's what it means to be a leader who's actually honest and thinking about the time scales of decades and centuries for this country, not 2-year election cycles. I appreciate that question. We're going to take one last one.
First of all, thanks for being here. I'm an abortion abolitionist, and I believe that murder of anybody is wrong, but the murder of the defenseless is even worse. And right now, what this country is dealing with is infanticide. So what's your opinion on that, and where do you believe life begins?
I believe life begins at conception. I believe that unborn life is life. I believe that is true. I came to those beliefs actually in my teenage years at St. X High School in Cincinnati, and I hold them to this day. But here's what I also know. I don't think this issue has to be as divisive as we made it out to be, because most of us in this country share those same feelings in common if we're willing to admit it. I can prove that to you. Take the case that Clarence Thomas brought up during the Dobbs case, when he asked from the bench about the pregnant woman who's walking down the street, who's assaulted. The unborn child dies as a result. You find me one person in this country who tells you that that criminal doesn't deserve responsibility for that death. You won't find one. I don't know. That says that we, most of us, actually honestly share those same pro-life instincts in common. So this goes back to what I was saying earlier. We can be against something, but what are we going to stand for to be affirmatively for life? I, for my part, as part of the pro-life movement, want to level up in what we're willing to do. I want to talk more affirmatively about paths to adoption, paths to childcare. I think it's a reasonable discussion to have. Greater sexual responsibility for men codified in the law in an era of genetic paternity tests that are 100% reliable. Or we should bake that into the law. As a man, I'm open to that. So this doesn't have to be about men's rights and women's rights. This is about human rights. We're all in this together. And I have to admit, I am disappointed sometimes that we haven't found it in us to embrace what we're actually willing to stand for, as opposed to just identifying what we're really against. You see, I think this is our way forward as a country. This is the stuff of Scripture, actually. Go back to the book of Exodus. When the Israelites are lost in the desert, wandering, not yet finding the promised land, they've escaped the Pharaoh. What do they say? We want to go back and be ruled by the Pharaoh. That's where we are as a country today. We're lost in that wilderness. Don't bend the knee to the real thing, you're going to bend the knee to something. You don't pledge allegiance to that flag, you're going to pledge allegiance to a different flag. Literally, there's a different flag. It's like the transgender flag. In Washington, D.C. in June, you will see more transgender flags than you will see flags for the United States of America. I know because I've been there. It's human nature. But it's up to us to not just point the finger, but to ask, what is it in our hearts that makes us want to bend the knee? That's the vacuum we need to fill. And here's what I'll say in closing today is that if we do that, if we actually have the courage and spine to stand for something, then I'm going to ask you all to reject the bipartisan consensus that we have in this country, that we are a nation in decline. Both parties teach us to believe this. We're a shrinking pie left to fight over the scraps of whatever it is a failing empire does. We're at the end of the Roman Empire. We're like Rome, we're taught to believe. Well, I don't think we have to be Rome. I don't think we have to be that nation in decline. I think the truth is, as a nation, we are all really just a little young, actually. Going through our own version of adolescence. Figuring out who we're really going to be when we grow up. And when you view it that way, it starts to make sense again. At least to me it does. When you go through your adolescence, you go through that identity crisis. You lose your way a little bit. You lose your self-confidence. Probably most of us did. I did, definitely. But we are stronger for it when we get to our adulthood on the other side. So no, I don't think we have to be that nation in decline. I think the truth is, we can still yet be a nation in our ascent. Maybe the early stages of our ascent. Maybe we're not yet even at base camp on our way to that mountaintop. Still that shining city on a hill. Still that country where we can look our kids in the eye and tell them in good conscience that the United States of America is still that nation where no matter who you are, or where your parents came from, or what your skin color is, or how long your last name is, in our case, that you get ahead in this country with your own hard work, your own commitment, your own dedication, and that you know what? You are free to speak your mind at every step of the way. That is the American dream. That is what we are running to. And that is what we together will revive to save this great nation. Thank you all. God bless you.